Last Word on Today FM.
A few people will probably text in now accusing us of Trump derangement system or syndrome. Spare us the text messages. It has been Donald Trump's year in the United States. We've decided that we're going to give, tomorrow is going to be between 4:30 and 6, the year trending. We're keeping America out of that. We're going to discuss it today. We have Marion McCune joined by Larry Donnelly. And to emphasise how much it has been Trump's year, let's just remind ourselves of a little bit of his inauguration speech in January this year.
The inflation crisis was caused by massive overspending and escalating energy prices, and that is why today I will also declare a national energy emergency. We will drill, baby, drill. All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. We will reinstate my remain in Mexico policy. The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons. And we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars. A short time from now, we are going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, and we will restore the name of a great president, William McKinley, to Mount McKinley, where it should be and where it belongs. And above all, China is operating the Panama Canal. And we didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama. And we're taking it back.
Oh, just some of his greatest hits from his inauguration address. Marion McCune, how much of that stuff, though, did he actually do during 2025?
Do you know, I was just thinking about that, Matt, as I was listening to there. And just to start off, I remember that 2 days before the inauguration, we all got messages from the Senate Press Gallery saying, sorry, it's indoors now. You've all been literally frozen out. And in a way, it was a metaphor for the year that came, in that the press were all pushed out. And right behind Trump, you may remember, were all the technocrats and all the broligarchy and the Elon Musks and the Tim Cooks and all the boys and all the congressional members. Republicans were pushed to the background where they stood with their hands swinging. And in a way, it really has been a year where he's just gone rampant against the media. The Musks and, again, all the tech titans have had their way. They've been able to write whatever the checks they wanted for themselves and whatever rules they wanted for themselves. And Congress has been absolutely useless. So it was quite prophetic. But on what happened there, I think the only thing that happened was he changed that actually came out of those promises was that they changed the name of Gulf of Mexico to Gulf of America. And even that is only being used within the United States and possibly the Mount McKinley as well. But, you know, I'm struck by how almost calm he sounded there compared to how he sounded at his end of year speech just a couple of days back, when he was yelling at everybody. He sounded completely bonkers. So it's been a quite a shocking year in some respects, and quite a traumatic year for America, and indeed for America's allies in a lot of other respects. But I suspect we're going to talk about all that very soon.
Oh, we are. I'm just looking at the list. I just started writing out a list, Larry Donnelly, of things he promised there. They didn't take back control of the Panama Canal, did they?
No.
No. And they haven't expanded their territory. I actually missed that one on the day, I think, this idea. But even in recent days, I see they're now throwing shapes towards Greenland again. And the Danish government has had to call in the American ambassador today, I think, to tell them to cop themselves on.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. To me, the story of this first year in many ways has been, I suppose, a colossally bad politics in every respect. If we remember back to 2024, Donald Trump, like him or loathe him, built an extraordinary coalition of support that for a Republican political candidate we never thought possible. Working class whites, Hispanics, black males, Asian Americans, still retaining wealthy individuals because of tax policy. And ever since then, he has so overshot the mark that it has been foolish in every respect. He's over-egged it completely when it comes to immigration. He has arguably lost the America First crowd based on some of the expansionism and interventionism that you've alluded to, and inflation, which he pledged to, you know, to help Americans who are hurting. He now dismisses that and says it's not an issue when that flies in the face of lived experience of millions of Americans. So, you know, we talk about Donald Trump all the time, about his ego, the things he does, et cetera. But from a political point of view, for somebody who pulled off an extraordinary triumph and had things going in a pretty good direction, he has made a number of terrible blunders this year.
I wonder, will he look back on letting Elon Musk loose as one of his blunders? Let's just hear when he announced first buddy Elon Musk as the head of the Department of Government Efficiency. This is back in the Oval Office in February.
I'll ask Elon Musk to say a few words and we'll take some questions. Elon, go ahead.
Sure. So the at a high level, if you say, what is the goal of DOGE, or I think a significant part of the presidency is to restore democracy. This may seem like, well, aren't we in a democracy? Well, if you don't have a feedback loop, okay, we'd have to, if you sorry. Tell you, gravitas can be difficult sometimes. So if there's not a good feedback loop from the people to the government, and if you have rule of the bureaucrat, if the bureaucracy is in charge, and then what meaning does democracy actually have? If the people cannot vote and have their will be decided by their elected representatives in the form of the president and the Senate and the House, then we don't live in a democracy, we live in a bureaucracy.
What on earth was he on about there, Mary McCullough? And was that the son X in the background making a little bit of noise?
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I would laugh at Elon Musk and I would call him out for the clown that he is, except for the damage that he has done. And, you know, I was just looking the other day at the Lancet study and the study by Harvard that estimates that USAID, which was the first thing he took a chainsaw to, you may remember that clown show with him and the Argentinian, his clown in arms, when they were at, I think it was CPAC, with the chainsaw and boasting about slashing USAID to ribbons. And, you know, it's estimated now that probably up to 14 million preventable deaths are going to happen between now and 2030, that already this year probably 600,000 needless deaths have happened, including 200,000 children, because he was let rip at that. And I still remember talking to a friend of mine who had worked at USAID for a decades, and her described to me how some pimply teenager came into her office and said to her, you know, why should you have a job on Monday? Explain to me. And like, just the ignorance and the callousness of these people and the damage that they caused, it really just makes my blood boil. And then last week he was whining to his buddy Katie Miller about how, oh, I don't think I'd do it again. You know, it cost me a lot in business. Like, no remorse, no acknowledgement of the colossal failure that it was, the stupidity it was, and the fact that it's probably going to end up, not only did it not save the $200 billion that he claimed, that he lied about. All of the studies that have been done, including the University of Michigan, the most recent one, suggest that it's going to actually cost the government billions of dollars in just making up for the mess that he made. So I think, as Larry said, there were a lot of huge blunders this year. Not all of them cost lives and cost endless suffering. Like, the people who are suffering as a result of this are increase in maternal deaths, women giving birth, you know, small children who aren't going to get vaccines and basic nutrition now, children like the Rohingya children who are now getting no support. They reckon they're going to be trafficked, that they'll be forced to get married young girls at the age of 9 or 10 as a result of all this funding being pulled. These are real consequences and real suffering, and they're so flip and so glib, and they're backslapping and, you know, joking about it. And the fact that he was even, Susie Wiles, I'm sure we'll talk about her, like, even the fact that she was able to say in a Vanity Fair interview, oh yeah, you know, he's an odd duck, he's an avowed ketamine, you know, user or whatever. And that this is considered almost something you just shrug at. And it really makes you wonder where America is at the moment.
Let's hear a little bit of when Trump actually got rid of Elon Musk, not long after they had done a car salesman act in the front lawn of the White House. But this is what happened in the Oval Office 3 months after Musk had been given the DOGE job.
We have here a very special gift that I give to very special people. I have given it to some, but it goes to very special people, and I thought I'd I give it to Elon on, as a presentation from our country.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. So I look forward to continuing to be a friend and advisor to the president.
Okay, Larry Donnelly, Elon Musk's influence and that of the tech bros. What do you think? How will that be regarded in history eventually, do you think?
Not good. I think let's take Elon Musk at first blood, and I would agree with everything that Marion has said. His influence at every level has been pernicious, and the human toll of his influence, do not underestimate how bad it has been. I think Susie Wiles, in some respects, put it best. She probably put it a bit too glibly. I think this guy is disturbed. I can't account for Trump's fascination with him or the fact that he got his way into Trump's in a circle due to anything else except for Donald Trump's worship of money and the fact that this guy has so much money. And that to me seems to be the only reason why Trump has him in his orbit, is he admires how much money that this guy has. When it comes to the tech bros, as has been well documented, look, a lot of them don't come from the same political orbit that Donald Trump is in. But what they do is they see where the power is. And again, they're equally obsessed by making money. And obviously, they saw the flow of traffic, and they decided the best way for them to advance themselves and their own interests was to get in with Donald Trump. And they did so shamelessly. And the influence, again, that they wield across a whole range of different spheres is preposterous. And Matt, like, this is a big issue in the United States. It always has been, the fact that money talks in America. But now we have a society in which very, very few people at the top dictate everything. And indeed, the perverse reality of all this is that's how Donald Trump got elected president, was the fact that so many Americans are disenchanted with the way things have gone, with income inequality and the rest of it. Trump somehow bamboozled many, many millions of Americans into thinking that he was somehow on their side and going to fix it. And here we are.
Larry, I'm going to stay with you for a moment, because I think one of the most worst moments of the year was, and there was a certain irony given that Elon Musk, that clip we played from the establishment of Doge, he's in the Oval Office in his black T-shirt and his baseball cap, and his son is climbing over the furniture. And then when President Zelensky of Ukraine arrived for a meeting with Trump, it was turned into a sort of a live meeting, a press conference, and that ghoul J.D. Vance decides to start lecturing Zelensky on how he was dressed and showing no respect for where he was or for the American people. And this has summarized what to many people in this part of the world is one of the most extraordinary things, how subservient to Russia and Putin this Trump administration appears to be, and how damaging that is to the security and future, not just of Ukraine, but of Europe. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I sadly agree, Matt. I remember you and I talking that night, and I think Marion was talking as well. I've never seen anything like what happened in the Oval Office in front of the global audience for that, for the dressing down, for the humiliating way in which Vladimir Zelensky was treated, somebody who's under siege, somebody whose country is under siege. And I think it reveals an awful lot about the mentality of this White House. And, Trump, I'm not so sure Trump has hard and fast beliefs one way or the other than himself and power and political realities. I think the last person who had his ear before that encounter was J.D. Vance. And I think J.D. Vance has demonstrated an antipathy towards Europe. And I think that was to the fore in that meeting. And I think that Donald Trump's extrapolation from his conversations and other things with J.D. Vance is that, look, there are power players in the world. Europe is gone from his point of view. America has its own zone of power. Russia has its own zone of power. China, we'll see what zone of power they occupy. But to Donald Trump's way of thinking, that is the world now. And that is deeply, deeply disturbing and worrying from a European point of view. And that's why, as I and many others have continued to say, Europe needs to up its game. But I think that that's one of the real revelations of the first year of the Trump presidency is the severing, the deliberate severing of the transatlantic American Western European alliance. And where that heads, I don't know. But I do think it is deeply, deeply worrying.
And Mary McKeown, this happens at a time when various countries in the Middle East are well able to suck up to Trump and put money his way, and suddenly they're his friends.
Oh, and any amount of it. And, you know, the thing is, in a way, in sort of cosmic terms, if you like, he's such a cheap date. You know, you get a secondhand plane from Qatar, you get a gold bar from a couple of Swiss businessmen, and, you know, and you're theirs. Like, I mean, he's not even an expensive whore. He's a cheap whore. You know, it's actually embarrassing. And when you think of the consequences of all this, yeah, sure, his family's coming out of all this by what they're up to, the tune of about $8 billion already. You know, the Trump Organization was valued at, I think, about $50 billion about a year ago. Now it's about $50 million, I think. Now it's about $800 million or whatever. Like, that's, this is just their buy and sell, where they sell their licenses and their whatever. And then, of course, they've done the big crypto grift and all the rest of it. But, you know, what a price. And I think that, yeah, nobody could have seen, I think, at the beginning of the year, the ruthlessness and the speed with which the European-US relationship would be utterly dismantled, and the speed with which he would turn on Zelensky. And Larry's absolutely right. That is J.D. Vance all the way, because he and his buddy Peter Thiel, they actually, this is the world that they envisage, that the world will be effectively run by oligarchs like them, and that really presidents and world leaders won't matter anymore, because the tech kings will rule everything, and they just see Europe as an old-fashioned stumbling block that's trying to tie them up with regulations, and they want to see Europe hammered, and they want to see Europe gone in any meaningful sense as a power player. I think, and then meanwhile you have Marco Rubio playing around in the Southern Hemisphere, where he thinks that if he crushes Venezuela, then Cuba will be crushed as well. And this is his childhood dream as the child of, you know, Cuban immigrants to Miami. And they're all just playing out their own little fantasies without, I think, any, like, forget a strategy, but without any real coherent look at the damage they're doing on every level. And that's really concerning, because yes, America voted for Trump, but the rest of us didn't.
But one of the most landmark events, and it was an entirely wrong thing to have happened. It was disgraceful. It was despicable. You have to say this in case you're accused of in some way endorsing it, was the murder of Charlie Kirk. And it was a terrible thing to happen, no matter how obnoxious much of the things he had said prior to his death were. He still did not deserve to die. This is his widow, Erica Kirk, addressing mourners at her husband's funeral in September.
That man, that young man, I forgive him. I forgive him because it was what Christ did and is what Charlie would do. The answer to hate is not hate. The answer we know from the gospel is love, and always love.
If I remember rightly, Mary McKeown, I think Donald Trump more or less said afterwards, well, we can still hate and no forgiveness. But tell us a little bit about what's happened in the last few days at the Turning Point conference, in which Erica Kirk was extremely prominent amongst an enormous amount of glitter and confetti and bunting.
Yeah, and you know, I think she should be lauded for that moment, because she was a young widow, you know, a couple of small children, and her husband was killed in the most brutal, like, live on, you know, relayed around the world in real time.
Barbaric.
And I think that she showed extraordinary strength in that moment, and in her ability to forgive. And as you say, Donald Trump came up afterwards and said he hated his enemies and he wasn't going to forgive anyone, et cetera, as you would imagine. Yeah, the Turning Point USA Jamboree, which happens every year around this time, just took place. And it was, I think, deeply worrying, because I think these events always have, there's always lots of loud music and confetti and fireworks and all that. It's just part of it. You know, there's a sort of a carnival atmosphere. there were about 30,000. Charlie Kirk's organization, just in case anybody doesn't know, was set up as a college campus. And he said he spotted a gap in the market, quite rightly, when he was a teenager, and said there are no conservative movements on American colleges. We've basically quit the field. And he was given tens of millions of dollars by conservative donors. And he set up this organization, Turning Point USA, to set up conservative organizations on college campuses initially. And it went way, way beyond that. And there were 30,000 young conservative Americans, mainly male from what I could gather, at this gathering over the last couple of days. And they were just addressed by J.D. Vance and Erica Kirk and Donald Trump Jr. and all these people. And at the core of what seemed to be happening is this huge split where J.D. Vance and most of the Turning Point USA seem to think that it's now fine to side with, or at least not condemn, out and out neo-Nazis and people who praise Hitler, who make jokes about gassing Jews, and who are absolutely rampantly anti-Semitic in what they say and in what they put online. And J.D. Vance is afraid of splitting the movement ahead of 2028 so that he can try and get his nomination. And they're all condoning people like Nick Fuentes, this clown, this 28-year-old clown, who's actually a very dangerous clown, who has said the most appalling things about Hitler and about Jews, about women, about black people, about any group you want to mention. And they're afraid of alienating him and his followers. And so when Ben Shapiro, who is a podcaster and, quite a well-known Jewish spokesperson, when he spoke, he was vilified by a whole bunch of people afterwards, including Megyn Kelly. He was critical of Tucker Carlson for having entertained Nick Fuentes on his podcast for about 2 hours, I think, without asking him any hard questions or condemning his views. And this all bubbled up over the last couple of days. But the takeaway that's really worrying is that it seems almost all of this Turning Point group and the millions of followers that they have are siding with basically Nick Fuentes, it seems, against Ben Shapiro, who is calling out the anti-Semitism.
Okay.
And that guys like J.D. Vance are going along with it, or at least looking the other way.
Larry Donnelly, should we be concerned about a resurgence of what we might call white nationalism in the United States?
Yeah, I think it's there. It's always been there. But I mean, let me say two things. First about Charlie Kirk. I do believe Charlie Kirk played a very important role. And I say that because there is no doubt but that United States college and university campuses are dominated by left-wing thinking. And by giving a platform and giving an outlet to students who don't agree with everything that the hard left say, I actually think he did a service. And by engaging with them, I think that was quite an important thing. I also think he would be appalled by some of the, people are critical of Charlie Kirk, and I certainly didn't agree with him on lots of things, but I think he would be appalled by lots of the things that people who want to be the heirs to Charlie Kirk, people like the appalling Nick Fuentes and others, have said, because it is grotesque. It is white nationalism. And the third thing I'd say, and this is one of the things that J.D. Vance had want to be careful about, is that political reality has to hit you in the head at some stage. And of course, there is an audience. There is an audience in particular among Republican primary voters for that sort of, I'm proud to be white. It's not a crime to be white in America anymore. But if you look at demographic shifts in the United States, the audience for that is shrinking every single day. And this is what was remarkable about Donald Trump's win in 2024, was the extent to which he got Hispanic voters in particular to be part of his coalition. And when you say foolish things like, we are white America, you alienate them. And Donald Trump has done a spectacularly terrible job at alienating these people. And I think in terms of the future of the conservative movement, they had a really big ally, a burgeoning ally, a huge, growing, the fastest segment of the electorate. And every single time you say things like that, you alienate them. And it's very, very foolish politics.
Larry Donnelly, thank you for being with us. And Marion McKeown. I know, Marion, you'll be back tomorrow for our year trending, which we won't be focusing on issues from America, but we have been tonight. So thank you for being with us this evening as well.
The Last Word on Today FM.